Welcome to another episode of Building Success Stories, where we explore the stories behind the North Country's most iconic brands. Today, we're sitting down with John Jacobs, the son of the original founders of Inside Edge and Reliable Racing. From a 1960s local ski shop to a global powerhouse in racing technology, this story has it all, including a lucky twist of fate involving a missed flight and the French national ski team. We'll talk about how a simple need for racing bibs in 1969 launched a direct mail catalog empire, and how John's own passion for product development led to innovations used in the Olympics and the World Cup. Whether you're a gearhead, a ski enthusiast, or just love a great American dream story, you don't want to miss this.
You're John Jacobs.
John, yeah.
And the son
of
the original owners of Inside Edge.
Right. Todd and Marilyn Jacobs.
Okay. And did it start as Inside Edge or did it start as Reliable Racing?
It started as West Mountain Ski Shop.
Oh, okay. So you started out
62. And,
okay.
And we moved here in 58. And when Mike and Cloud and whole brand started West Mountain, are they 62, I think?
Mm-hmm.
And even some come in and do a rental, you know.
Yeah, handle that part of it, yeah.
Also the ski school and also the race programs.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, you know.
So they handled all of that.
They handled all of that.
So the shop and the school and the racing program.
Yes. Okay. And then it was where 65, some celebrities started to happen.
Yeah.
Between Mike Brad and my father. And then he decided, you know, and he, my dad was full-time paper salesman for Fitch.
Oh, okay. Is that what brought them here?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a whole other side story. But, so they decided to move out of West Mountain, and they went to what's now Hayman Engineering on Bay Road.
Okay.
Used to be Skelly Schwinn.
Oh.
Back in the day.
Oh, really?
And so, folks. So, well, let's move the shop in the town.
Okay.
But before that happens, Fall Legs actually predates Inside Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Fall Legs.
Yes. And where Dunkin' Donuts is now,
mm-hmm.
that used to be Fall Legs.
The one near here. The Dunkin' Donuts. Oh, yeah, just up the road.
And so, my dad had a little volunteer with Gary Howe and Slugrid. So, he was sort of involved with Fall Legs, but during Abu West Mountain period.
Yeah.
But then you decided you would store either one's hole.
Mm-hmm. So they were on Bay Road?
Yes, you were on Bay Road for over quite some time until about, so you all went off to college in 73. They moved, we moved here sometime like about 77, 78.
And was it Inside Edge?
It was Inside Edge.
At that point.
The Reliable Racing came about in 65. And then, one of the little speed clocks, Paul Lake, make sure he called my father's. And I got to ask a bit, it's a pretty deal.
Okay. Yeah.
In their basement, creating up 100 bits.
Oh, really? They're doing it themselves.
Yep. Steve Lapton was helping.
Mm-hmm.
And they jumped at the car to what? Still, probably out of the club.
Mm-hmm.
The guy there is a.
Got
a short level option to make out the check.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, well, make it out to Reliable Reason Supply.
Yes.
So that was the beginning. Officially incorporated in
69.
And that generated a whole different vectors of the company. Directed to Calos. They're both splitting into consumer, and this is the business.
Yeah. So, it's a different kind of business.
But back in the ski shop days. So, not only were we one of the original ski shops, but we were one of the original bike shops that carried bikes that were
not American made.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so.
Importing or whatever.
If you wanted a 10 speed bike, you had to buy a Schwinn or a West Street. Or
the other.
Oh, there were some other ones. Would no, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you know, if you went down towards the city, you could find some good stuff.
Yeah.
So,
But in this area.
Yeah. It was nothing. The Schwarnvarsi.
Yeah.
And my brother had gone out to ask him for a summer ski cat. And 16 were out there. And they're riding around on these Crucial bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
Lightweight.
Mm-hmm. Road bikes. Mm-hmm. And Jean-Claude Killy was one of them.
Oh, really?
Coming down in the tennis pass at 60 miles an hour.
Oh,
yeah. They asked him, you know, to invite him. My brother came home.
Fearless.
He came home and said, Dad, I have to have him push out. How's that? Well, it's what the French team, it's what their summer training is all about. And so my dad, going to New York City every week to sell paper for Finch.
Oh, okay.
He went to the local Peugeot
car
dealership and they said, oh, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah. You have to go to the
low man. XYZ Street. Levels you.
The bicycles.
Oh, okay.
So my dad found him and he walked in. French guy and a little bit of a language barrier. So I would like to buy a bicycle for my son. He said, oh, no, no, monsieur. You'd have to buy three bikes to become a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And my father said, okay, well, sell me a PX10 that you'll wait in the air wait, and I'll be on my way. And somehow he got the bikes into a taxi to the train.
I was going
to
say, and logistically.
Get up to, train station. Whatever it was.
You used to take the train down to the city?
Well, most of the time we flew.
Oh.
And it's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But his decision to go full time in this business was not.
At the time, he had the shop. He also was
still on the road for
an importer distributor on being. He was going around to ski shops all over the state trying to sell in cross country equipment.
Oh, okay.
And most of them would just laugh him out.
But make some clients in Buffalo area and Rochester where. Don't have a lot of Alpine, but there's all kinds of cross country available.
Yeah.
So he was doing that. He was kind of moonlighting it as well. But anyway, he got the bikes home, and then he came to the conclusion that okay, he's renting space from the bike shop. And Skelly, which at one point was Noble Schwinn, I think, but Skelly or Noble, I can't remember which it was at the time, but they decided on. The clubs.
Yeah.
So he had this facility year round now instead of,
he was going rolling.
Oh, okay.
Bike shop
take that's store. Good planning, but yeah.
You know, so but then the bike shop decided to close, so now he's got to pay rent for
year round.
So what the hell am I going to do? So he decided there were a couple of guys in town at that time who found out that he had brought these bikes in. And Larry Bekfinov was an executive at Top Metal Insurance. He was a NCAA cycling champ.
Oh, wow.
When he was at, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy, Jack Sturgeon, you remember the Jack Holloway, the U.S. Cassiter?
No.
Okay, so this was the home of the catheter.
Okay.
This is where the heart catheter was.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that did it, his name was Jekyll. His company was U.S. Cassiter. Well, he had an engineer that developed the first extrusion, teeny little extrusion tubes that are these horses.
Wow.
He was an avid cyclist. So he found out somehow that
yeah.
I think he had a riding buddy, which is Nick.
Oh, yeah.
And so they kind of found out that, hey, I'm not sure exactly me on that, but basically my father called the guy in France, the French guy, and said, I'd like 20. I got to do something in the summer.
Demand was building. Oh, and then,
sell bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you order 20. And that spring, what showed up, that next spring, like 69, something like that, was a 20-foot container of like 200 bikes.
Oh.
The guy thought,
no.
20-foot container.
Oh.
My dad just wanted 20 bikes.
And he got a 20-foot container full of bikes.
Full of bikes showed up. Boom. So, like, holy shit. That's why I'm a sophomore, junior high school, where you're all, and there are other guys that we started to develop this sort of cycle. But Mick and Jack stepped in and helped us build all these bikes and showed us how to repair them.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much
So did he end up selling all those bike stuff?
He did. Wow. See, he knew all of the ski coaches all over New England. So we called Jack Henderson over in New Hampshire and said, hey, hey, the French team, you know, they're riding your kids ought to be young.
Yeah.
And so people come from Maine, from all
the place,
by the Peugeot bike. Yeah. The only distributor north of New York City, the only reseller. So that's how we got the bike.
So that worked out good.
Yeah. And from then, you know, from 1969 to present, we had probably 20 different brands in the era. Crescent, Zeus, Raleigh, Henschwin, and Michiatong. Oh my God.
Not Specialized. I used to have Specialized.
We were one of Ben Serrata's first deeds that I still have a Ben Serrata fit frame over here. Where people come in, Ben was a custom frame over. And we developed this fit frame where you could get on, you mess this, bend to that, you know, then get the geometry perfect, and he would build a bike. So we were one of the early Serrata.
Yeah.
Dealers, Morbacon, you know, it's expensive. But, that's what put us in the bike business. In those days, we had effectively one competitor in cycling, and that was Marantz and Hudson Falls. But they kind of stayed at the...
With the kid.
The lower level stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The brands that were...
The cheaper stuff for, like, everyday kind of...
Yeah. Where we started to focus on high end.
Yeah, because people are using them for training and more serious use.
Yeah.
So then you had all the ski stuff, you had the reliable racing, what they had, and then the bikes.
Yep.
So where are we now? Around 70, the early 70s?
Yeah, the 70s is when we started publishing catalogs. After the first brochure was 69 for reliable racing. It had a paper bib, a cloth bib, bamboo. That's also small and cool, and portable timing system. It was the first. From that grew into a major presence in nationally, internationally, where it's a little internationally. Locally, we're just bumbling inside.
Yeah. So it's good to have the two sides of the business.
Yeah. And that everything just kind of blossomed from there.
I think I bought some rollerblades here in the 90s, when that was all sort of starting to take off.
Oh, it was interesting to see what comes and goes on rollerblade. There was one time, at one period in SIA, Ski Industries of America, your annual buying show, rollerblade owned the place. 10 years later, they were effectively gone.
It's not so safe rollerblading around the streets.
Well, I still have some. They're made by Alpina, and I love the bike guys.
You see people, but well, I could never get the knack of it. So
some of the inventions that we had, what we became famous for were specialty products that you couldn't get anywhere else. Roller skis, the cross country racers in the summer. You know, we had our own.
We were manufacturing them at one time called Road Ski.
And we were the first to have a cross-country binding boot setup that technically had a heel locator, so your boots would slide off the ski.
Located as you kick them by. So we've done a lot of stuff.
So innovation.
The breakaway small pole was something we didn't invent, but we perfected. And our pole was the first one ever to be used at a World Cup Alpine. T-80. The Olympics threw us out. 1980 Glen Placid, because the Europeans felt it was as unfair again as they had never seen breakaway flexi slalom disc before, so they insisted that Ben Wu be used. So, but Moxlear, the gal that ran the World Cup in Water Valley, called us up and said, "Bring your poles over here. I want to use them." So that was.
So you got the okay. So was your dad inventing and working on these things, or did he have people working with him?
No, I mean, when I graduated in 78 from Middlebury, I spent a couple of years chasing the ski racing dream, trying to get on the USB team, and you know, that kind of got It's like those guys, well, there was professional series at the time, so I did that for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got married and went to work for the old man.
Yeah. So you came into the business in the around 80 or in the early 80s?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dasani was involved with most of the development of the products that I assess
apart,
like the solvent bowls, the automatic timing systems, and some of the safety materials that you see at a ski race nowadays are things that I was cutting and
developing.
You know, because we had relationships with plastic extruders and more in injection molders. And so I was really a product development guy. They turned the business over to me in 2000.
Okay, so 2000 is when you took over.
Yeah.
So. Does somebody else own Inside Edge now?
Yeah, so I sold the company in 2017. And the guy that bought it used to work for my dad when he was in high school. He worked at Reliable Racing for a number of years and then decided to
move on.
And then he was a national sales manager for the import distributor. And did that for 20 some odd years. They eventually cut him loose. And then he had the opportunity to buy this company, and he did.
And what's his name?
Steve Kvidlong. K-B-I-N-L-E-H.
I can probably find that online somewhere.
How to spell it.
Maybe you can be
an LLC. Okay. Because John at Reliable Racing is a good email for you. Okay. Okay. But Reliable Racing is still going, so that's what you're doing now.
Well, I'm retired.
Yeah. Oh, you are. I've seen you twice when I was in here. So,
sort of
you're checking people out.
I'm just helping out, still.
Well, what else?
I'm still the guy who's...
You're not out on the slopes?
Well,
yeah.
I'm an alpine official, so I'm out there a lot.
Oh, so you're still working and ski racing? Yeah.
I ski in the mornings when I can, when I want to.
Get out there early.
But I went out to be a board of directors for the National Skiers Association.
I
don't just... the industry, obviously. Generational change now. I don't know everybody anymore. But still a lot of your old guard know you. I know them. They still call me personally to place an order.
Yeah.
And if we're late delivering an order, then they call me again. So I'm still on board in the ski areas of New York, the New York ski area trades. I
served with
the guy who used to live in Buns Falls, Scott Brandy, who was an insurance guy. He used to work for Associates. And he's now up in Tupper Lake, I believe. No, it's cancer. So, he's the president of the trade association.
So you're keeping busy.
That's the busier I need to be. I'm also the founder. We brought back professional ski racing, World Pro Ski Tour. You love to see it in the Chronicle. My son's
participant. And so that's another thing that I do.
Yeah.
So
promoting professional ski
racing. Yeah, it's we're kind of two pathways for ski racing. You know, when you're a kid and you aspire to be on the U.S. ski team, train up a smaller guard, and you end up in an academy somewhere. And then you, that 1% go on to chance to take a ski team, World Cup, Olympics.
Yeah.
The other pathway is for a lot of those guys that are elite college or ski current former ski team members, they have the opportunity to come to our races, the World Pro Ski Tour, and actually make money.
Okay.
And the difference, primary difference, is in order to get a berth at a NORAM race or a World Cup race, you have to be picked by the USU team or coaches. In our situation, any journalist can show up. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit.
pay your old fee, your, pay your fee, raise, and you're in.
We run like
yeah. So they need to qualify because you need yeah. someone that can at least keep up and not waste your time.
It's only two spots on the bracket. On yeah. test. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got 50 guys showing up, and only 32 of them are going to be in. See, you'll then
you have your round of 32 and the round of 16 and your quarterfinals, mm-hmm. semifinals, and your finals. Just like Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the further you advance, the more money you make.
But, you know, if you get eliminated in the first round of 32, you're at least going to make your unseed fee back in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great
form. Man, Gary Evans is totally non-astrology.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can show up.
Yeah.
My son, he did have a world ranking that one time. He's three.
Mm-hmm. He was old. As a professional or as an amateur?
Yeah, as an amateur. Yeah. As a fist, yeah, world rankings.
Mm-hmm.
And but then decided not to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
He's an entrepreneur. Yeah. And but he's so passionate about ski racing. So mm-hmm. he can show up.
Yeah.
But if we take his money and he usually qualifies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't have the training advantages of river roughness or, mm-hmm. you know, some of these guys that are active on the World Cup and,
mm-hmm.
or after World Cup finals, their schedule looks and they come to one of our races and make some money.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Paul Molson, who is more consistently top 10 of the World Cup right now, had a hell of a time getting funding to Please be on the U.S.
Yeah, hell of a time.
Mm-hmm.
She would come to our races and walk away with $20,000.
So that's the thing with amateur. I mean, amateur used to be much more amateur
yeah,
than it is now. And like, things have changed.
It's no issue
yeah.
with a ski team guy making money on our tour. And even that's even changed in more recent years in college. Because that whole world, NCAA world, now allows college athletes to get money through sponsorship and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So now they used to have to put money into an escrow, and no way to spend it was
to let it sit there.
Or if they're going to spend it, they had to do a nonprofit
contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Now they keep the money.
Yeah.
Which is great.
A lot of these guys. You know, the tuition in a place like Dartmouth is 80, 90, 90 mm-hmm. a year. So, you know.
Yeah. You got to live.
Got to live. So, the overall tour winner last year is a DU athlete. Mauricio Demper is a Norwegian guy, Christian Solberg. On DBA last year, his earnings were, I think, north of 30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Helps.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, skiing's expensive.
Yeah. Well, especially at that level.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have eight pairs of skis,
right.
pairs of boots,
protection, and all kinds of stuff.
You know, what these kids are spending, families are spending at academies almost as a junior in high school. You go to Bourbon Academy or somewhere like that, send me apron.
Mm-hmm.
All set. It's tuition, travel, training, equipment. It's huge.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Most of the kids going to these academies come from pretty good one from Connecticut, New Jersey, you know.
Yeah.
Chicago, Minneapolis, whatever.
Money, not a question.
In the old days when I was growing up, it wasn't nearly as expensive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I graduated from Middlebury in 1978, the comprehensive fee was $5,000. Mm-hmm. Everything. It's room, board, books.
Yeah, no.
Classes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That was
they hit back then.
Yeah.
Paris,
yeah.
But point located in $9,000.
Yeah. My daughter's just room was $6,000 for a semester this year. Just going up. But that's a fairly cheap school.
Yeah.
It's private. That's in Cuca in the
Cuca.
Yeah, in Finger Lakes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, my ancestry comes from Lisville.
Oh, okay.
Which is
that's
Southern Tier,
mm-hmm.
417.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful out there.
It is.
Luckily, she got a good scholarship.
Oh,
yeah, luckily.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I told her she had to go to a SUNY, mm-hmm. not realizing that she'd be eligible for these academic scholarships. So,
my daughter went to the University of Colorado, went out there and emancipated herself.
That's what I did.
In the British office, you can't. Mm-hmm. They detect any financial support for parents or grandparents or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, she got through it. But the problem is she had to take out loans. And the problem with these private lenders like Sallie Mae, which is now something else, mm-hmm. is that they would prescribe how much money you had to borrow. You know, if you were University of Colorado and he managed to figure out a housing situation was really cheap and he had two jobs, you still had to borrow $30,000-$40,000.
Oh, really?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why.
That's kind of crazy.
This is why the whole university system is a complete joke.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately for her, she can't have all, you know, she's now a doctor.
Oh, that's amazing.
Trying to get a residency in dermatology, and this is tough. But try to get an appointment, you know?
Yeah.
Good luck. Yeah, we'll see you in 4 months.
Right. So Reliable Racing now, you're retired, but the business is still going.
Still going, yeah.
Still going, but none of the kids came in?
No.
Your kids didn't come in?
The doctor, Dick, must have worked for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So the succession plan was sell it.
Right. Yeah, well, sometimes that's the way it's got to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work with the family, so. So then, now Felicia said that she's in the works of buying Inside.
They're in negotiation.
Harry didn't want me to write about it unless I talked to the other people. She said, if I said it's in the works, it should be okay. But Harry was like, I'd rather you talk to both sides to make sure that it's okay.
Yeah, I don't think the other side is reveal that. There's too much.
We can leave that out.
Too much negotiation happen.
Yeah.
Timing is probably not right. I think in the springtime may change. But, you know, from, you know, Steve's my age.
So yeah.
He's like
looking
for an exit strategy.
Yes.
And the problem is their absentee managers.
Yeah.
They both live in Vermont. Steve and son live in Vermont. So if you're going to run retail operations,
you've got to be there.
Handsome.
Yeah.
You know, Felicia is a millennial. She knows her shit. Mm-hmm. Bike hands, D at snowboard.
Yeah.
And this is her. So it makes sense to
yeah. Right.
Make a deal.
Yeah.
And then they could focus more on the business. So that tracks those consumers. The narrow band of product selection, which ski racing, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, did they take on Reliable Racing also?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so they've got that too. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, you go on the Reliable Racing website, you can see.
It's a good website.
Thanks. Yeah. You can see Golf Sport Supplies and comments for park and recreation and even a line of rodeo. Training.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Well, that's, you can't really navigate there from our website. Mm-hmm. We've set up the website for something called bobblepoles.com.
Oh, that's fun.
I mean, we took the breakaway technology. I just took it and I modified it to work for barrel racing and football bending.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem solves there is that the traditional barrels and poles, it solved that.
Mm-hmm.
So take a run and you have to get off your horse and set everything back up. Yeah. And so we created a solution where you didn't have to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then plus the seat, the barrel is actually a soft thing.
Mm-hmm.
The rider doesn't get hurt, the course doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
And so like stable owners at Brenton Tarn, huge boost for that.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be just so much more training here.
Yeah. Without having to reset everything.
Exactly.
That's exciting. Yeah. All those innovations.
Yeah. And then sports timing is like, you know, we're into Florida sports, equestrian, and I get other.
But I'm a guy keeping the balls in the air.
You're keeping it going. Even though you're retired, you're still keeping it going.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's good because you want to keep busy.
Yeah. Well,
I can't imagine retiring, but.
Well, obviously you can't either.
Some people are not. But like, I'm 62. So like all my class, I went to Gloversville, so I'm from Gloversville.
Yeah. Okay.
So I go over there and I'll run into, and they're all like, 62, I'm gone, I'm retired.
Yeah.
Like they're moving to Florida, yeah. Whatever. Yeah. It's like, yeah. I wouldn't want to do that.
It depends on what your lifestyle, what interests you.
Like. Let's think if you want to go down to Florida and sit around the pool.
So my wife spends a lot of time in Florida because she's a wildlife photographer.
Oh, wow.
She shoots a lot of birds. Mm-hmm. So for her, it's like, yeah, I'm going to get out of here to the river because there was salt around here. Go down the U, shoot some birds with my friends. And, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. She'll come back in just 2 days and we'll start skiing.
Yeah. You know? Right. It's always something to do.
Yep. But I couldn't hang around the beach. We went, Jenna had a rotation near Hollywood Beach, and so we went down there and spent a few days. And,
I mean,
good for a little while.
I mean, if you're a golfer, great.
Yeah.
But, you know, we like to ride bikes, so that's good too. But otherwise, you just have a lot to do. All
right. Go to Disney. I have friends that go to Disney like every week.
Really?
They love it. Yeah, adults, not with children. They just go themselves. Really? They love it so much. And it's expensive, but like.
It's just, the Gazette is the world we live. You go every year. Yeah, every year.
I have another friend that goes twice a year. Once with the kids and once without the kids.
But we do different, you know, down there, we went into the Everglades and poked around. It was awesome.
There's other things down there, obviously. Yeah. But to go and live in like the like older communities, the developments and all that.
I don't like golf.
They go listen to, they don't though, but they go listen to music and they go dancing at night. And, you know, there's social life there.
Susan, I have an uncle that lives in the villages. And it's because when you get there, you're on the little golf cart, you just cruise around.
Yeah.
Do all the social things, you know, dredge your bingo, and all you do.
And
drink.
Right.
Somebody told me that the villages has the highest STD rate in the country.
I've heard a few myths about the villages. Yes, I have heard those statistics. Yeah, and the like, there's some sort of code of, what do they call them? Loofahs they put on the outside of their on the golf cart or something, depending on the color, like depending on what they're into.
Oh, interesting.
But I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, that what are you going to do when you're retired?
Yeah.
Right? A way to spend your time.
Exactly.
That won't go in the podcast.
Yeah.
Or will it? I don't know. So is there anything else to cover? It's good things are still going strong.
Yeah, we're still going.
I didn't know about all the innovations and stuff. That's really interesting. When did your dad retire from Finch?
It was like 69. So
really,
side story that is contained in the Mohawk Airlines DC-3s from Warren County to LaGuardia, and that's how he got that.
Oh, he was a pilot.
No.
Mohawk
Airlines
was going from Glens Falls down to like what Idlewild, whatever it was at the time.
Yes.
Like,
exactly.
Because I was a paper buyer for a big printing company, but that was in the later 80s. So then we used to print.
Yeah, exactly. We
came here because my grandfather was a paper machinery engineer.
And
he was big friends of Lucky Beeman, the CEO at Fitch Prime. And my dad, having been worked as a chamber of commerce guy and a ski coach and this and that, finally said to him, I gotta get a real job. Called his father. Talked to Lyman. Lyman said, "Yeah, we need a sale." Mm-hmm. So I was chair, and he started selling paper in New York City. Mm-hmm. But you go down to
Park
fucking animals.
That's the way to experience the city.
That was the days of, you know, Don Rickles, and you go out to a go to the Oak Bar for three martini, then you go to the mini club, and you see Don Rickles with your buddies. Those guys are that generation.
Well, in sales too, like even in my time, we were getting wined and dined. Like Finch brought me up here, even though I'm from here, and put me up at the Queensbury, took me for dinner at the Sagamore. Me and my assistant,
you would.
Holland says me. Amazing. So I'd scoop the Eskimos. And he would come back from New York City with an order on the back of a matchbook for 50,000 pounds of fine, opaque textbook stuff that Finch didn't know how to make. They didn't then air into the show.
That's funny.
And into the, you know, newsprint, newspaper. He would come back with, you know, with an order from a textbook company. And so they make it.
Isn't that what they specialize in?
Now it is.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's what I would buy from them.
My dad was really the guy to chase the whole business.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because we printed mostly lightweight because it was financial documents. Mm-hmm. So we were like, they built a printing press. This is before I started working for them. They built a print shop in the basement of a building near right next to where Trade Center.
Okay.
To cater to the Wall Street people.
Yeah.
And so it was very light paper because it was being shipped around everywhere. But whenever we needed the heavier stuff, that's when we brought in the Finch.
Right.
50 pound, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Reading cards, textbooks, stuff, you know, art books.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, so if he'd been there a little bit longer, I was like, maybe I would have run into him, but I didn't. I was doing this in like the later 80s.
Yeah. Well, so the reason he quit Finch is because.
I gotta get the hair appointment.
Oh, well.
What time is it?
He was supposed to not play some Idle Wildy here. Mm-hmm. And he decided at the last minute to go to Montreal.
Oh, really?
Hang out with some
at the last minute.
Yeah, to hang out with ski industry buddies. Mm-hmm. When he hadn't told my mother.
Oh.
The play that he was supposed to get on, Rurik County, that's the one that crashed into Pile of Gum.
Oh, no.
He perished. He was supposed to be on that flight.
But he hadn't told your mother.
So she was
That was a lucky
caller eventually when he got to
Montreal. That was like amazing fate for him to have not taken them.
That was like
those little planes, though, are a bit scary.
And he, plus Sergei Reliable Racing is starting to really occupy a lot of the time. Mom has come in, she got a master's in education, she can be a French teacher, abandoned that because and so that's time to need to. Company started.
Yeah.
So that was.
It's still going today.
There we go.
All right.
The American dream.
It's incredible to think that a business born in the back of a West Mountain ski shop in 1962 is still a leader in the industry today. While John is officially retired, his impact on the world of professional ski racing and his dedication to the local community continue to keep him busy. Whether he's on the board of the ski areas of New York or promoting the World Pro Ski Tour. A huge thanks to John Jacobs for sharing the history of Reliable Racing and the Inside Edge legacy. Thank you for listening to Building Success Stories, a production of the North Country Media Network. Our mission is to document the professional legacies and success stories that drive our region forward. To discover more shows in our network, or to learn how we can help you own the conversation in your industry, visit us online at northcountry.media. I'm Ann Donnelly, and until next time, keep building your success story.